feel very grateful for this opportunity we've been given to be together, for the giving of the presenters, giving both of themselves and of the traditions to which they belong, which they represent, so that it has been a gift both on the in the visible, in the outer, and also in the unseen, as one senses the grace of these different traditions, what I call these different threads of love, and really, of course, a special gratitude to the at times not even invisible presence of Hazrat Inayat Khan, whose grace has permeated a lot of this work, and whose, I must say, as Pia Zia was talking on Thursday morning, and I watched the fingers of his grandfather weaving these threads of such soft devotional love into the hearts of all those who were present. It was a real, to me, a real privilege to watch a master at work. It was, and a master always works with such effortless grace. It is us, the students, that have to make the efforts. And so I say, I feel very privileged to participate in this coming together of lovers and of love, because as I mentioned on Thursday evening, it is really in a way, the real work has actually been done by the participants. Because, first of all, you have had to sit and listen to us. And in this culture, it's not always easy to be the recipient. We like to be doers. But it has been through your hearts and your attention that a certain work has taken place. You know, it's like Mrs. Tweedy always used to say, the great ones are superiors. They are infinite. They know the future, they know the past. They are merged with God. And yet they need us here in this world as their willing slaves, because they don't have a physical body. They don't have the limitations of incarnation. And so to do a certain work in this world, they need us. And that's why I love the story from Shamsi Tabriz that Pia Zia mentioned, of we can offer to him our need, we offer to him our limitation. And this, in a strange way, completes this mysterious merging of inner and outer, this linking together of the world, that we live in this outer world often painfully aware of our limitations, and we glimpse the inner world with its infinite expansiveness, with its, and if we are graced, glimpse a love that is complete, that is entire, that the outer world seems to hunger for. And this is a kind of extraordinary alchemy of love that then takes place, in which the lower and the higher come together and reveal there is no such thing as lower and higher, because it is all one. And yet as always, this is something Ibn al-Arabi stresses, it is always part of our contribution to recognize that we are the servant and that he is the Lord. We are here for his sake, as I mentioned on Thursday. We are not here for ourselves. And it is through that I have watched with a lot of awe something form in the inner, almost visible in the outer. And that's what I want to explore this morning and to try to understand what is. I've seen this, what I would call a droplet of pure love, be created through this gathering. And as all of you know, it is a great mystery working for the beloved. That is why Sufism is full of hints, full of suggestions. Very little is definite, because we don't know. Our beloved knows, but he knows often in a way that we can't understand. But I have watched over the course of a few days this droplet of love, pure love, be formed, that is kind of made of the different colors of love belonging to the different traditions, and yet is also beyond them, because it comes from a dimension before anything was separated. A oneness that does not even know of any separation. Now normally this quality of love, this substance of love, I think it is similar to what the Sufis call Sir Allah, the secret of Allah, the secret of secrets, this extraordinarily precious substance, is what is given through his grace, or through the grace of the Sheikh, to the devotee, to the dervish, to the wayfarer, this substance that is needed to transform us, without which there is really no journey. There is no spiritual evolution, because we cannot do it on our own. And although the elements of this world are quite magnificent, very beautiful, they lack that secret of secrets that awakens the heart, that spins the hidden cells of the spiritual body so it can awaken to its true nature. And this is normally given through spiritual transmission, through grace, to the individual. This is the awakening of the light within the seeker, so that the mystery of light upon light, light rises towards light and light comes down upon light, takes place. This is the ancient esoteric mystery of inner alchemy, in which the sleeper awakes, in which the real human being, not the apparent human being, begins to be revealed. And this is, of course, a mystery, a chemistry we are all involved in individually. This is through our devotions, through our practices, through our aspiration, and through the grace of whatever tradition our soul is called to, takes place. But as I mentioned at the beginning, this gathering is part of a larger picture. We are not here for ourselves. And although we have been given much through this sharing, the beautiful music yesterday, the sharing of the zikr, we have been given much, it is the purpose of this meeting, of your efforts in coming here, is not just to foster your own individual inner journey. And remember, friends, it is always the intention that determines where what is created. This is not so much understood. It is the intention at the beginning that determines really, in a strange way, the outcome of the journey. This is in the Naqshbandi saying, the end is present at the beginning. And this is also why often when one meets one's real teacher for the first time, one is asked this question, why have you come? Because of course, the Sheikh knows why you have come. He can read your heart. But to make that intention conscious, why have you come? What are you here for? And it is that first moment, that intention, that it is like the real nature of the seed that becomes the acorn that becomes the oak. So, because the intention from the very beginning was that this gathering was not for our own individual development, but for the sake of the whole, for the sake of not for our sake, for his sake, then something could be formed in this gathering of lovers that belongs to the whole, that has a purpose for the whole, that is, I think, of infinite value to the whole. And this is where, in a way, the mystery deepens, because what does that mean? What purpose for the whole does a droplet of pure love have? We know what it can do to us, which is why in the Sufis they say, never take a sip of that wine, because then you will become a drunkard, then you will sell everything for just another sip. Keep away from this pure love that belongs to what is real, that belongs to the beloved, this tear from the eyes of the beloved. Keep away from it. And we know what it, just a tiny little droplet of this substance can do to us. But for the whole, for this whole world that is asleep, what is its purpose? It is not our business to disturb the illusions of the world. What right do we have to stop people hungering after power and greed and ambition? Because it is really, one doesn't interfere with the desires of other people. We are his servants. We are not lords of the world. We are just his own personal idiots. And yet, it is his world, and if through us, for some mysterious reason, he creates this quality of love, or he brings it into being because he has already created it. But through us, he brings it into being, so it is now just between the worlds. What is its purpose? Why are we here? What is the relationship of our individual effort to this world that I think we all know is in a state of crisis in some way or other? Maybe it is an illusory crisis, but it is an illusion that dominates so much of our lives. And I think there are few of us who are either of such purity of heart, or so detached, or of such an elevated spiritual state that we don't notice the suffering and chaos that is permeating the globe. It is our life. As I said, it is part of the reality of where we are now. Now, there is this ancient esoteric teaching that has to do with the relationship of the macrocosm and the microcosm, that the individual human being is a model of the whole. This is the hadith that says, God created Adam in his form. And according to Ibn al-Arabi, this holds both for the great Adam, who is the cosmos in its entirety, and for the small Adam, who is the human being, and who is the microcosm of the whole. And also this quotation from the Quran that I mentioned before: we shall show them our signs on the horizons and in themselves, and it is until it is clear to them that he is the real. Also, there is this interplay of the macrocosm, our signs on the horizons and in themselves, that is the individual. And there is this very important esoteric relationship between the individual and the whole, and that the fact that the whole, and here I think the cosmos, for the sake of our present vision, is kind of a little vast. I think our own world is enough of a cosmos to think of. Yes, there is actually the a whole interrelationship between the vastness of the cosmos, between all of the stars and the interstellar spaces and the black holes and the dark matter that the scientists have now discovered. There is an extraordinary interrelationship between that vastness and our own selves. But it is the whole that we are working with at the moment, we are also working with the vaster whole, is the whole of our world and how our hearts can be used to not just to heal but to transform the world. And as I say, we know in our own journey how this quality of love heals and transforms ourselves. How it softens us, how it frees us from many of the patterns that not only imprison us, but also create a perpetual mirage of suffering. How the love dissolves them. And what is the relationship between this journey and the whole? And in a way, once you step out of the illusion of you being an individual, which is really, we think this is how it has always been. We think this is the real nature of the individual. But I remember when I studied medieval architecture and really came to understand the thought patterns of people living in the 15th century, they didn't think like that. They saw the individual as part of a whole symbolic world in which nothing was separate, everything had a symbolic meaning. Everything was part of a whole hierarchy of different levels of being, and whether there were demons or angels or spirits, and we were all part of this interrelated symbolic world. The idea of the individual having to go out and make a life for themselves, it was not part of their consciousness. So it is helpful to remember that this idea that we have our life which we have to lead and fulfill is only a recent illusion. And of course, through our own inner practices, we are given a glimpse of a much greater dimension in which we see this extraordinary oneness. And often first we glimpse it in meditation, in the uncreated world or in the intermediate world, and we see it hinted at, or we look at the night skies and we sense this unity. But to bring it down into the practical reality of life, and I personally believe oneness is very, very practical. I think it is a much more practical way to live than separation, than individuality, because oneness works. Then you can see that we are part of this whole interrelated whole. And nobody is separate, nothing is separate. And of course one can glimpse the mystical truth that I mentioned the other evening, that our individual consciousness is just a spark of a greater consciousness. And you can even experience that in meditation. You go into the self and you realize that the individual self is also the universal self. And this means that the whole can respond in the same way an individual can respond. That this relationship of macrocosm and microcosm is a living entity, is not a philosophical image, but a practical reality that belongs to the esoteric spiritual traditions. And then this pure droplet of love, this droplet of very pure love, that is, then it, you can see that maybe it has a purpose beyond this meeting, and that when we go, it won't just be, we won't just go home and think, well, we were at a nice conference, a nice gathering, Sufis came together, there was beautiful prayers and music, and the weather was nice, but a work was done that has a purpose beyond our individual self, and yet also belongs to our individual self, because of course nothing is separate. And to me, this is the moment that the individual takes real responsibility for the self. And sadly, we have been given this image that the only way you can take real responsibility for the self is to get involved in politics. And I'm sure some people are called to that stage. But there is, a lot of us are not, and don't enjoy the dualism and argumentation that belongs to that kind of dialogue, and would rather do real work that belongs to the real. And love, of course, is tremendously real. We have had a culture that's either deliberately or not deliberately chosen to forget that, that has given love to Hollywood. And yet we know that it is not so. We know that there is this love, that is this direct link between the Creator and the creation. This mystery of He loves them and they love Him. This, the beauty of there are servants among my servants who love me and I love them, and they look towards me and I look towards them. And then this love that has been created through us coming together can have a very different purpose, can be given to the world directly, because the world needs it. Because the world needs lovers of God. You know this beautiful saying, if there were no sweepers, the world would be covered in dust. This is, sweepers is of course a term for Sufis. We sweep the dust of people's hearts. We sweep away the dust that covers the world, that makes it caught in forgetfulness, that obscures it from its divinity. But if there is oneness, and if we are not separate individuals who decided for some reason to come to this gathering, but if we are part of a oneness that brought us together for its own purpose, then the love that the oneness has created through us, through this coming together, must have a purpose. Now I suppose the question is, do we need to have any knowledge of that purpose? Or is it just part of the whole mystery of life, of love, of being a servant of God, of being the pen that doesn't know what it is being written, of being the blank piece of paper? Or do we in a way have to take another step and take a certain responsibility for the work that is being done? And step into a kind of spiritual maturity that recognizes that we have a responsibility. And as much as we are the nothing before God, we are also created. We also partake in this mystery of creation. We are here in this world, and a certain work needs to be done here in this world, in the planes of creation. That the spiritual journey is not just the soul going back to God and dissolving in bliss, but it is also involves the return journey of actually reincarnating that divine substance, of bringing it into life, of celebrating that divine oneness, that love in our life, in the life of the whole, because there is no difference for a lover of God. One's own life is life. That's why one should never judge one's life and say it is good or bad, because it is life. It belongs to God. And if you judge your life, you are judging God. But to live it with dignity and with one's own power. And I think this has to do with really this step from adolescence into adulthood, of being just taking responsibility for what we have been given, and taking it for ourselves and for the whole, and realizing there is no difference. There is no magic answer, but there is a process of evolution, just as for the whole, just as there is for ourselves. And because we have each been given a taste of truth, I think we forget what a privilege this is. You know, somebody asked me in questions the other evening about this experience I had when I was 24, when I was shown what the world is like for people who have forgotten God, for people for whom the spark in their heart has been hidden, who have not had the grace that it is blown upon. And I was shown this very, very grey world, a world just of work and procreation, in which it is just grey. There was no magic, there was no spark, there was no light. It was like I imagine those sort of Victorian mill families, you know, that where everybody got up at 6 in the morning and went to the mines or went to the mills and worked till 6 at night and came home and ate and slept and did it again day after day. We can't imagine what life that must have been like. And we have been given a privilege of the taste of truth. I think we forget how privileged we are, just like we forget each time we open the refrigerator and there is food in there. We forget how privileged we are. And there was a time in the past when one used that light just for one's own spiritual evolution, and that time is past. And what is interesting is that if people do that now, if they use their own light just for their own spiritual evolution, it will work up to a certain stage and then a door is closed. They cannot go beyond a certain level of evolution if they use their light solely for the sake of their own spiritual welfare. It will take them to a certain level, very nice level possibly, but it won't take them into really the arena of love where the real work for humanity is taking place, where the masters of love and their disciples are working. And it is a commitment, it is a choice. Are we here working for the whole, or are we here working for ourselves? It is very simple. Much of the complexity of spiritual life has been taken away at this time as we enter into a new stage of human evolution.